agenda, and members will be pleased to hear there's nothing exceptionally strategic in this agenda, like, you know, putting in a party wall in the members' room or anything like that. So hopefully we can deal with the business with suitable dispatch. Item one, Chairman's notices. Hopefully people can read those for themselves. Item two, apologies for absence.
Yes, Chairman, apologies received from Councillor McKenzie and Councillor Shrimpton. Councillor Miss Lewis attending as substitute for Councillor Shrimpton. Councillor Durham is attending as substitute for Councillor McKenzie.
Okay, thank you. Item three, to confirm the minutes of the Finance and Corporate Services Committee held on Tuesday, the 26th of January, 2016.
Agreed.
Agreed. Okay.
Oh, no, they're not.
Because I have sent my apologies and they weren't listed.
Okay, noted. Any others? Otherwise agreed. Good. Four, disclosure of interest and disclose the existence and nature of any disclosable pecuniary interest, other pecuniary interest or non-pecuniary interest relating to items of business on the agenda, having regard to paragraph 6 to 8, inclusive of the code of conduct for members. Okay, there are none. Item 5, public participation.
There is none.
There is none. Item 6, committee chairman's good news announcements. These, I'm delighted to say, seem to get longer every time I see them. Okay, so good news announcements, members. Okay, housing benefit and council tax support. Pleasingly, we have increased the speed with which we're dealing with both of those, and so currently there's a target for dealing with new benefit claims of 16 days. Year to date, it's actually been 14.67. For benefit changes of circumstances, it's 11 days, and it's currently It's currently 6.55 days. So some good responses in the benefit and council tax support area. Collection of council tax and business rates, importantly. There's been a sustained and robust focus on the collection of council tax and business rates, resulting in a slight increase in both collection rates, 0.1% in council tax and 0.34% in non-domestic rates. There's also been a net increase in the total rateable value on which business rates are charged from the start of the year, together with a decrease in the number of empty properties. Apprenticeships. In recent years, we've been actively supporting a number of successful apprenticeships within the housing, revs and bens teams and the customer teams, and I'm very pleased to report that our seventh apprentice, Jordan Eves, has successfully secured a full-time permanent position within the organisation. During his apprenticeship, Jordan was awarded an NVQ Special Merit Award to recognise his achievements, and also received an award from the leader of the council recognising his positive attitude and flexibility. We're currently supporting an eighth apprentice and recruiting a further two apprentices within our customer teams. Hythe Quay. The quay had collapsed into the river, as people know, in December 2013. As part of the refurbishment, an opportunity was taken to address layout issues where conflict often arose between public and business users. There are now very well defined areas between public and business use, and the refurbished visitor floating pontoon should also encourage more visitors to come to visit Maldon. Works were completed ahead of the end of January deadline in order to accommodate the Boxing Day rowing event, and the council has protected, preserved and improved this historic and iconic part of Maldon for future generations and visitors to enjoy. And finally, I certainly don't think this part forms part of the good news announcements, but I am asked by officers to make a announcement regarding the Denji bus service network review consultation, which I'm sure members are looking forward to responding to with great excitement. Essex County Council's contracts for the bus service in the Denji area are due to expire in September 2006. These are conventional bus route contracts for services D1.
When? 2006?
September.
2016.
Apologies. These are conventional bus route contracts for services D1, D2, D4 and D6 operated by Stevenson's, and a demand responsive service D5 operated by Arrow Taxis. In line with the area review process, the County Council is consulting on some proposed changes to these services. These are not reductions to the level of bus service, but rather alterations to make more efficient use of bus assets and to improve access to some areas, including South on Ferrers. The consultation will run until the 18th of March. Members have any specific comments to make, please respond directly to the County Council using the email sent out to all members from Richard Holmes on the 23rd of February. And with that done, we can now move on to item 7, the pay policy statement.
Yep.
Thank you, Chair. Under Section 38 of the Localism Act, the Council must publish a pay policy statement each year which outlines the approach to the pay of our workforce and, in particular, the pay to our senior staff. The pay policy itself is attached in Appendix 1, is more or less essentially the same as last year. The policy itself needs to be approved by Council at the next meeting, and therefore we are asking this committee to recommend this to Council for adoption for 16-17.
Members, I think this is all very straightforward. Is that noted? Agreed. Okay. On to the customer strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. This report comes before you tonight, members, to seek your approval for the draft customer strategy, which is Appendix 1. This strategy complements our current IT strategy, and it sets out the vision of the way that we want to deliver our services. As you'll see at 3.4, we've set out 8 key priorities for our delivery of our services going forward. First one is right first time service delivery, so we don't get customers come back to us where we've made errors. The second is a focus on resolution at the first point of contact, so more focus on when a customer comes in to see us, we deal with the query there and then. The third aim is helping our customers to help themselves, so that's providing the help to customers to help them self-serve using the website. The next one is working in partnership with complementary organisations to provide added value, so that's the work that we're doing with some of our partners that are co-located with us. The next one is focusing on end-to-end service delivery, which is rather than looking in silos as a department, is actually looking at the customer journey from end-to-end, not just looking at one part of that customer's experience. The next one is about learning from customer feedback. We're not particularly good at learning from the feedback we get from customers. We have feedback, but we're not particularly good at learning from it. So one of the things we're going to be doing through the strategy is a review of our current feedback process to ensure that A, it's easier for the customers to use, and most importantly, we can actually see the feedback and learn from it and demonstrate how we've learned from that feedback. The next element is about the culture of the organisation. This is about really putting good, excellent customer service at the heart of our values and behaviours with our staff. And finally, the last part is providing access to our services using the most efficient and effective channels, which is web and contacts, web and our contact centre, whilst ensuring that our face-to-face service is available for those customers who most need our vulnerable customers. So those are our 8 key priorities, which are in that customer strategy. And what we're asking for tonight, members, is to enable this to go out to a consultation with our stakeholders and our customers.
Okay, Councillor Miss Lewis.
Thank you. We had some of the parishes in this afternoon, and one of the criticisms that came across was that the initial customer contact was failing in that there were members of staff were reporting, members of the public were reporting that when they were speaking to Maldon District Council, our staff were calling themselves Maldon Council, and as a result of it, people were then turning up at Maldon Town Council thinking they were here. I know it sounds odd, but I can assure you there are other members with us this afternoon, and this was something that was said. So can we please reinforce to people either in the contact centre or on the front desk that we should always be referring to ourselves as Maldon District Council and not Maldon Council, please?
Okay, Ms Green.
We'll certainly take that on board. Thank you.
Councillor Harker.
Yeah, on the page 6 of the report, visitors to the office is not recorded. Is there any reason why we're not recording people who visit the office?
We don't have any facilities to actually do that. We do have visitors that come in for meetings, to meet partners, and there is no clear way of being able to record that. One of the things we're looking as part of the action plan for the strategy is to see how we can actually record this information, whether it be electronically through people just literally clicking a screen as they come through, or some sort of footfall process. There's maps that go under the doors. There's lots of different ways, but it's not something we've ever measured, and I'm aware that that is something that we do need to, and that will be in the action plan.
Indeed. Councillor Beale.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under 3.6, learning from customer feedback, are we going to have a situation where we've got to retrain some of our staff to understand the problems and anomalies that are there, or is it a case of one officer is going to be assessing all these and then have feedback to the rest of the staff?
Ms. Green.
The intention is the feedback will be a centralised corporate system. It will be building upon what's already there, so it's just making the information we've got, making it work harder and smarter for us. So it will be fed back to the service managers, because they're the ones that are going to need to learn, but it will also be overseen by the customers team in terms of organisational learning.
Agreed. Recommendation agreed. Okay, thank you, members. On to item 9, the right of approval for debts which exceed officer delegation levels. Oh, sorry. That's another one for you, Ms. Green.
Thank you, members. You have before you tonight three write-offs which are currently in excess of the levels which officers have the delegated authority to write off. As you'll see, the first two are in respect of companies that have gone into liquidation, and the third one is in respect of a company that has ceased to trade. And so we're asking for your authority to write those debts off, members.
Councillor Fluker.
Thank you, Chairman. I must admit, this to me is not indifferent to what happened at CFAS and indeed the shoe shop on Wick Hill. And the other thing that concerns me enormous, which brings words like Jazzima Cottage to mind in Southminster, is the fact that if our revenues department had been speaking to the planning department, then they would have noticed that in both 2002, Chairman, and indeed 2009, this particular company at this actual location made planning applications in relation to commercial activities. So to say that nothing was going on before 2010, Chairman, based on our own intelligence, is incorrect, and it should not happen again. Thank you, Chairman.
And Ms. Green.
Thank you, Chairman. The Council were aware of planning applications, and there was a request to the Valuation Office at that time to review the rates that were due. The Valuation Office did go out to the premises and decided that there was no change to the rateable value. At the moment, we are exploring with the Valuation Office how that happened, but the bottom line is that the Council did report it to the Valuation Office.
And I'm grateful for that, and I'm sure Ms. Green refers to the application in 2002 and 2009. It would be useful to have that information in the report, and I look forward to getting a response from Ms. Green, which I hope she circulates to all members of this committee, explaining why in 02 and 09 we didn't actually flash this up and deal with it. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, and I think the point is there do seem to have been some failings by the Valuation Office, and I did ask the officer whether or not we had any claim against the Valuation Office, and it seems that we doesn't. We don't. I think it probably makes sense to send the Valuation Office a letter of complaint if there have been failings by them, and to see whether or not they can learn, as well as the Council itself, from this process. Councillor Durham.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, we need to take this very seriously, because the Secretary of State told us very clearly that his intention is within 3 years local authorities will rely, their sole income will come from council tax and retain business rates. Now, that means we take full hit of it. I mean, how he's going to do that remains to be seen, but he was very firm on that within 3 years. So, we're going to need to be a little bit sharp identifying these things before they get this far, because, it's not going to be that long before it comes out of our pocket, potentially, and that could obviously have significant impact on the financial viability of this authority.
Yes, indeed. Councillor Possibly do. Ms. Possibly do.
Thank you. The loss from the first of these three non-payers to to us, 40% of that 54,000 is in the region of £20,000. So it's clearly a very large loss to our district. I would like to know why there's been no contact or very little contact with the Valuation Office, and I would have liked the Monitoring Officer perhaps to have been here, because I think we have a recourse here. Now, in 2014, this company went into liquidation and opened up 3 days later or 4 days later, and clearly have not paid debts. You know, we know companies do this. This happens, and clearly there is a legal loophole. But the amount of money that we as a district have lost, I think we need to go back to the Valuation Office and say why. Well, they're clearly incompetent when it comes to the valuations that were done. Some of the premises weren't actually registered at all as business. And I believe that as a district council, we should go to the Valuation Office and ask for some sort of compensation. That's for the row, I'm talking about the first one. We've also lost another probably 8,500 from this private homes company, the Sand Island. And I must say that I did speak to Miss Green this afternoon, and she was extremely helpful, so I would like that noted, please. But we've also lost another 8,500 from the other company. Now, if these companies, clearly there are loopholes and they can reopen a company under a slightly different name with the same directors a few days later, the point here is that we as a district council have lost a lot of money, and a lot of that is down to the incompetence of the Valuation Office, and I believe we should have some recourse.
Yeah, look, I completely agree with the member, and I think in relation to the third of these debts, ultimately that was accrued over a period of, just under a year or so, and you can actually, you can imagine those sorts of situations arising. You know, companies do go bust, but, where you have a debt which has been outstanding here, for 4 years, we should never allow it to get into a position where we have 4 years' worth of business rates which are liable. And it does seem in that case, and I had the same discussion with Ms. Green, that actually the Valuation Office is to blame, and unfortunately we don't seem to have any legal recourse on them, because they essentially don't take any legal liability for the role that they take. But equally, we've found in the past that when we've made requests for compensation from government departments, even when they haven't had to pay us the money, they still have. And so I think we should write to them with such a request. And I think in the context of that item especially, it would be quite valuable for the committee to get kind of chapter and verse on exactly the choreography of how all of this happened, and there may be lessons to learn within the authority as well around the planning application, or maybe all of this blame is on the Valuation Office. But I think we do need probably a little bit more detail around that one. We don't have any choice, I don't think, in writing these off, because we're not going to get them paid by the company. I also have concerns because obviously, as in a number of situations, this does seem to have been brought by possibly even the same directors, but certainly associates of them, and they still seem to be in operation in some shape or form. And it's important that the authority as well ensures that proper value is being generated from the assets, and one is always concerned about whether that's the case in some of these situations where they're still trading but under a different name. Sorry.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to come back. Yes, I believe that a very strong letter should be sent, and an actual request for compensation. I think the request should be, I understand that clearly we as a district have to write this off. I understand that. But when it comes to the compensation, I believe it's something completely different. And I believe that the monies that our district council has actually lost, we should request the whole amount from the Valuation Office on all three of these particular companies. And as for the Roe company, I was assured this afternoon by Ms. Green that they are the same directors, and it was very shortly afterwards. Could I ask, please, Ms. Green, is that correct?
This is correct.
Yes, that is correct.
OK, Councillor Flukar.
Very quickly, Chairman, just to take the committee's mind back to the company at Wick Hill and indeed CFAS, I'm sure, Chairman, and I'm also sure that it would be documented somewhere, but at that time I thought this committee agreed that we would have a policy whereby if anybody was behind in their rates for 3 or 4 months, then we non-domestic rates, we'd automatically start to take action. And if we'd done that with President Office against the landlord, then the landlord would have immediately woken up to the fact that he wasn't responsible. We then would have been 4 months into the process and we then could have taken action. Because to me, all of these things, it's too little, too late. The companies are wound up and we lose out. Councillor Dunn makes a very valid point. When we come to top slice NDR, whenever that might be, these sort of things are going to affect us dramatically. But I do think, Chairman, a policy on this needs to be written. Thank you.
And let us be clear, already, proportion of these, I think it is 40%, as the Council says, you know, we are getting hit by this. So, you know, we certainly want to make sure that these don't happen anymore. And so I think, you know, I'll take Councillor Durham and then maybe we can agree this recommendation.
Chairman, Councillor Flicker makes a very good point. It's one thing when a private individual gets into trouble with paying their council tax. When a business doesn't pay its business rates, it should start to ring alarm bells the first month that they miss. Because there's usually a financial reason. It would, to me, indicate a cash flow problem straight away, and I think we need to be at least putting them on a list of defaulters even after a month, so that we keep an eye on it.
Yeah, and maybe we generally are in green as well, people who are 3 or 6 months, you know,
then you wouldn't be getting these long debts, because we will have every excuse under the sun, but with a business, it's going to be cash flow,
yep.
And that ought to ring alarm bells.
Totally agree, Ms. Green.
Members, if I could please assure you that with the business rates, we do take action automatically against any business after 14 days if payments are late. We do prioritise particularly the large debts. Reminders are sent out promptly and we follow them up with court action. We use the bailiffs on firms very quickly because that's quite often the easiest and best way to recover the debts. We also have what we call our sort of large account rate payers, which get particular extra scrutiny, where we've got kind of our top 15 rate payers, which are the biggest ones that get specific extra scrutiny almost on a weekly basis to ensure that money is coming in. With the big ones, even if it's a couple of days late, we're phoning the companies up, chasing them up, finding out what's going on. So I can assure you that over the last year or so, the steps that we've taken with regards to business rates to recover them have improved and are continuing to improve. I think prior to 2013, because the council did not get any additional income from business rates, then there was the level of resources and the level of activity that was undertaken with respect to business rates was not as great as it is now, and that has been stepped up over the last few years and we are very robust. And a lot of these issues are historic issues, and I would hope that we would not see so many of these going forward now.
And that's very encouraging. Councillor Sarsfield, and then I'll take Councillor Beale.
Thank you. I must have misunderstood Ms. Green this afternoon. I was under the impression from our conversation that this 14 days when somebody hasn't paid their standing order or direct debit, whichever it happens to be, that only came in, the bailiff going, which is costing apparently £200 or £300. If they're late 14 days and it's costing £200 or £300, if they get the money back, and there's no fee apparently to the bailiff if they don't, but that would probably be quite a large percentage of the payment anyway in many instances. However, I think what Ms. Green told me this afternoon was that they only got this 14 days if the company had already gone into liquidation.
Thank you, Chairman. The way that it works is that all the business rate debts, they will have a monthly payment plan and there is a date that it's due. If the payment is late, then after 14 days they will get a reminder notice, and if they don't pay after 14 days then it proceeds to a summons, and that happens quite quickly. Basically that they're in court within 2 months. Once we get the court order, what we then do is we would pass that to a bailiff, and the bailiffs will secure the debt at no cost to us. Any costs are payable by the ratepayer to the bailiff, so doesn't cost us. If the bailiff isn't able to recover the debt gets returned to the council, and again there is no cost to us. If the company go into liquidation or bankruptcy, we have an arrangement with an insolvency company that if we are unhappy with the way that the insolvency has been dealt with, or if we feel that the insolvency practitioner has not got the best value for the assets, they will undertake a review of the circumstances for us for a very small amount of money, and will give us advice as to potentially how we can proceed. We have had one instance in the last year where we have identified a situation where it was personal bankruptcy, and we were not satisfied that the insolvency company had obtained the best value for the property when it was sold. And that has resulted in the official receiver agreeing to open up the bankruptcy again, and a further investigation is now being carried out at no cost to the council. And we're fairly confident we should be able to recover the money through the insolvency company's indemnity insurance. So we are being very proactive. I think the difficulty is with a lot of insolvencies is it's quite difficult to prove sometimes that the assets have been sold for less than their value. In the particular case I'm talking about, we did see those assets sold on a matter of weeks later for substantially more, so we had some evidence, and that's why we've been able to proceed with that. If we're successful, we certainly will be advertising that, getting some publicity, so again we can sort of deter anybody that's thinking of going down that route from taking that sort of action, because we will pursue it.
Councillor Beale.
Thank you. The process itself looks as though maybe it needs reviewing, as has been pointed out, but the one with was it Roe, etc., on Fleet Farm, they would have had assets, lorries, etc. Couldn't we have put the bailiffs in straight away and then put a claim on those before they actually disappeared?
Sadly not, unfortunately, but I'll let the officer respond.
No, I think there's two issues. One is once the insolvency has started, we are an unsecured creditor, unfortunately, and we have no preferential right to be able to obtain any of the assets. And secondly, in particular in the Roe case, most of those vehicles were lease vehicles.
Councillor Durham, and then let's move ahead.
Thank you, Chairman. Just out of interest, you know, I'm aware that when companies start to have cash flow problems with their payment plans and various ways of them stretching it out, I'm just wondering how many companies do we have in that sort of situation at the moment, or how many companies are currently in arrears with us?
I haven't got that information to hand. I can certainly get that information. If I can again provide some reassurance for members that officers cannot make arrangements, particularly with the very large ratepayers, by themselves. We have a process where if a ratepayer comes to us and they're not able to pay, they can make a request, but that has to be reviewed by a senior officer and authorised by a senior officer before that arrangement is entered into. Otherwise, if it is a situation where the ratepayer is trying to avoid payment because they know that they are going to declare themselves bankrupt or going to liquidation, we need to look at that and decide if we think this is a delaying tactic or if it is a genuine situation where they just need a little bit of further time to pay. So there obviously has to be an element of judgment there, but that judgment's exercised by a senior officer, not by one of our customer services staff. So again, it's just adding some extra controls there.
Could I suggest that we accept the recommendation, but in conjunction with the following? A, we send a letter to the Valuation Office making this claim where, you know, we think that they've been responsible for some of these costs. Secondly, that we get a kind of, you know, chapter and verse, if you like, on the first item in particular, just to understand whether there are any lessons that the authority can learn. And I think, as the officer says, you know, we didn't necessarily dedicate a lot of resource to this historically because we didn't have to pick up the bill. It wasn't our cost. It was central government's cost. Now we are, you know, we need to make sure that we're having the various departments talk to one another so that those issues are dealt with rapidly. And then finally, I think it would be helpful maybe on a six-monthly basis for us to get, and maybe has to come on green, a list of those situations where people are in arrears and there is a material sum involved. So I don't know whether that's £5,000 or something like that as a minimum. But also where we think, for example, there are delays going on with evaluation, and we think that actually there would be the company would be in arrears for £5,000 or more if the valuation decision was made. I think those are probably a sensible collection of recommendations, but happy to hear any more from officers. Councillor Perlman.
Just one thing, Chairman. Is it possible, I think 6 months is possibly too long a period to look at an outstanding list. Could we kind of at least bring it down to 3 months?
Okay. Councillor Oswego.
Sorry, very quickly. I think the letter to the valuation office should actually say the amount of money we want, and I believe that that money is somewhere in the region of between £37,000 and £40,000, and I think it should be State Council have lost. Thank you.
Okay, are those recommendations, is that seconded and agreed? Okay, let's move on to item 10. The new homes bonus grant consultation. Is that one for you, Ms. Singh?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. As we all know, the Council relies heavily on the New Homes Bonus Grant to support our general fund budget. So, for example, for next year, we are relying on nearly £800,000 of grant from central government on this. The Secretary of State have declared that New Homes Bonus will stay in the local government finance system in the foreseeable future. However, he is planning to remove £800 million from the New Homes Bonus total and redirect that to adult social services. Obviously the impact on Maldon is a huge devastating impact on us if their proposed changes are to be implemented. So the whole consultation published at the time of provisional settlement was about how to reduce the grant total by about £800 million. Paragraph 2.5 of this report highlights all the proposed changes that are set out in the consultation. Appendix 2 is our proposed response, and as you can see, we are rejecting every single proposed changes that are suggested by the government, we are asking the calculation methodology to stay as they are now. Comments are invited from this committee, and we'll be responding to the consultation by the 10th of March, which is this Friday.
I think quite straightforward. Councillor Miss Lewis.
It was just something that was being discussed at the weekend at Spring Conference. There were quite a few appeals to the Secretary of State about the new homes bonus and the planning appeal situation, where if houses were granted on planning appeal, we would lose the new homes bonus. It was actually pointed out, not that it should have needed to be, but it was pointed out to the powers that be, that sometimes planning appeals are lost, but there are no costs against the council because they seem to be reasonable. The council hasn't behaved in an unreasonable way, and that on balance the appeal has been allowed. And if that's the case, there should be no reason why the new homes bonus is lost, because it wasn't an act of unreasonableness. They did scratch their heads a little, didn't they, about that one, and they said that they would go away and reconsider, but at least it was being flagged up by quite a number of authorities.
That's encouraging. Is that agreed?
Agreed.
Okay, on to item 11, supplementary estimates environments. There weren't any supplementary estimates or environments, but there have been a number of procurement exemptions. Are those noted?
Noted.
Okay, annual review of financial regulations and contract procedure rules, Ms. Ng.
Yeah,
thank you, Chairman. Sorry, I should have done an introduction. We've got a new finance manager, who's Ray Eames. He joined us on the 4th of February, so this is week 6. So we welcome him.
Yeah.
welcome, anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, he might decide to hand his notice in after this committee. no, that was a joke, by the way. That was a joke. Coming back to this report, annual review of the financial...
annual review of financial regulations. So this is a typical annual review. Appendix A shows the financial regulations, and as you can see, there are just minimal sort of changes. The only changes that we've brought in are reflecting the latest government legislation, especially the accounts and audit regulations 2015. All the changes are track changes or highlighted in the appendix. Appendix 2 shows the contract procedure rules, again, minimal change compared to the current version, and the amendments have been made just to reflect the introduction of e-tendering, so moving us to the 21st century, and also to modernise the tender opening process.
All fairly straightforward, members, is that agreed? Okay, on to budgetary control, item 13.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Good evening, and it's a pleasure to be here, and I won't be handing my notice in straight after this meeting, so... it's nice to meet you all, and just a quick summary of the budgetary control for the period April to January, obviously just before I arrived. The period that's in question is roughly 83% of the way through the year, so we'd expect the income and expenditure to be roughly at 81 to 86% of the way through. Pleased to say that income across the authority is pretty much spot on at 83%. We've achieved 83%, so that's what we'd expect. And income, expenditure is slightly down at 80%. To narrow down where the expenditure is slightly underspent, it's in the customer and community directorate. And there's a few specific areas in there under paragraph 3.3.5. These are obviously based on the revised estimates for 2015, so we'd expect them to be fairly close. Okay, thank you.
Members, report noted. Councillor Harker.
Yeah, paragraph 3.3.7 has still got a budget of $3 billion.
Sorry, Chair, can I just say that that was a typo that was picked up after it went... It was three notes too many on the end there. Do apologise for that.
We're looking for a healthy
underspend. That would have been good.
Aside from that typo, members comfortable with that? Okay, no cheers. Item 14, final council tax setting 2016-17.
Yep. Thank you, Chair. So this is now combining all elements of council tax. So if I could just summarise, for Essex County Council, their combined increase is 3.99%, including the 2% on the adult social care precept. Essex Fire Authority, 1.9% increase compared to 15-16. And the Police and Crime Commissioner for Essex is £4.95, which equates to about 3.36% increase. So members will recall that the council made the decision to agree a 1.95% increase on the district council tax. So this is now combining all the elements for 16-17.
Councillor Beale.
Thank you. A few weeks ago, before all these were set, the newspapers are set for putting down information saying that it's all going to go up by 4%+. We have got 3.99% Essex County Council, 3.36, I think, was that the police, etc.
Yes.
And we're 1.95. I think it ought to be spelt out to the general public that we aren't the ones that are causing these large sort of increases from the percentage terms. And if we are indicated where they are being increased, because it doesn't look good on us when you go council tax going 4.4%. The general public, because we are the collectors, think it's us, and I think that we ought to be a little bit more sort of positive with our information to say, look, it's not us, it's the others that are putting it up, because what causes the problem is in their own pockets, and they're quick to blame us, and I think that we don't do enough to protect ourselves and our image to a degree that we should.
We should absolutely do that. I do know, certainly in the past, and I'm assuming this will happen again, it does say on the bill itself how much each of the precepting authorities goes up, so it should be clear to people when they get their bills on the bill.
Chairman, but who reads that? Often you have to identify it separately and get it home to people. They look at it and they just look at the figure.
Well, I hope since it's a bill, people do read it, because otherwise we haven't got a very good chance of being paid. But Councillor Miss Lewis.
Whilst Councillor Beale raises an important point, I think that actually this year we did make a special effort with the press releases to point out very carefully who the various portions went to. And it was something that we did in the press release following budget fixing, and we were very, very specific about which bits we were responsible for and who was gathering the booty elsewhere. So it is a lesson that we've learnt, and certainly we're already looking at always making sure that we show which bit comes to us and how all the rest goes elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would just say that you know, all the authorities have pretty much gone for the maximum increase that they can, give or take. So we were capped at 2%. The police authority wasn't capped at 2% because they're in the lowest quartile or whatever of charges, I think. And the county obviously could go to 4% because they're allowed a 2% on adult social care as well. And so essentially everyone has gone for the maximum increase. Partly because, obviously, you know, the resources coming into local governments have gone down significantly, and so we have to source some income from somewhere. But I think hopefully that should be clear on the bill, and I don't know whether there are presumably statutory limitations on what we can write on the bill, but you know, we should make it as clear as possible.
Could I just say, in terms of the communication outwards, and bearing in mind the letter that would be going to the district valuer, when we point out to them that they've possibly cost us 40%, it might be worth reminding them that that constitutes 1% of our council tax take.
Fair enough. Councillor
Chairman, I've got to come back. We have got another way of doing it. We still have the courier, don't we? Why don't we put the information in the courier apart from putting it onto the rate bill? Because that is one of our sort of opportunities to indicate our side of the story.
Yeah, I think there's a limit to how much kind of self-advertising we can do on that now, but we'll take the point. Do we agree the recommendation? Okay, 15, any other items of business that are urgent? There are none. Items, Councillor Fluker.
So, Chairman, just to preempt your next item, perhaps the Director of Finance and Regulatory Services could explain why this report is on green, so that way I hope, Chairman, your proposal will pass without incident. Thank you.
I'm sure she'd be delighted.
Yeah, I am extremely delighted. Sorry, that wasn't supposed to be a sarcastic comment. The reason is mainly because we've got an evaluation report in here. So it's got it is perceived to be commercially sensitive information.
I think the standard protocol is that all valuation reports come forward on green. Now, you could argue that this, because this is a public sector authority rather than a private sector counterparty, i.e. the county council is the counterparty here, then maybe it shouldn't. But I still think it's a good protocol that everything that's valuation-wise should be on green.
Well,
you
know, Chairman,
you normally keep your... But that's by virtue of the officers deciding that actually it should come on green. We don't have to receive it on green, but I think it's a good protocol for all valuation information to come to the committee on green.
Chairman, if you allow me to come back, without sounding sarcastic, of course, but you know, this is an asset that belongs to everybody in the district. And my personal view is, is it Smith Lambert, whoever, I can't remember now. Lambert Smith Hansen. I mean, you know, they've done a valuation, we've agreed the valuation. I think the members of the public need to know what we're doing here. It's an asset that we're disposing of, and I'd like to think that it should be done in the interests of openness and transparency, and therefore not under Schedule 12A. But I'd give way, but I just think that, you know, we're disposing of a council asset. There's absolutely nothing wrong with this at all. So why not put it into the public domain.
First of all, I think there's a difference between making a decision and then putting the information in the public domain and having a discussion about something. Because if you show your cards before you've made a decision, and you're preempting that we make the decision in favour of this, in favour of selling it, if you show your cards and then we decide that actually this isn't the valuation that we want to go with, we want to get another valuation, then I don't think we've necessarily been terribly smart. So I don't, in some respects, I don't disagree with you. Once we've made the decision, I don't have a big objection with telling people how much we sold it for, but I don't think we should do that until we've actually made the decision.
Well, I can't, because I'm not a land surveyor, but I look forward to hearing those comments.
Councillor, and the recommendation, I think, in the minutes will refer to that anyway, so that hopefully will cover your point off.
I look forward to hearing your proposal, and I'd be delighted to support.
Councillor Beale.
Mr. Chairman, if we're worried about what the general public think, which is only right, surely after a decision has been made, we should also indicate what the benefits are from having that land disposal, rather than just think it's been sold and gone cheaply. We should always ally with it the benefits which are there for the general public at the same time.
Yeah, and again, hopefully that will be very clear through the minutes in relation to this being sold for a highway improvement. But anyway, so in that respect, can I resolve that under Section 100A, subsection 4 of the Local Government Act 1972, the public be excluded from the meeting for the following item of business on the grounds that they involve the likely disclosure of exempt information as defined in paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 12A to the Act, and that this satisfies the public interest test. Is that seconded?
Thank you.
And agreed. Excellent.